I've always taken the approach, what's best for the team? I'm gonna contribute as much as I can and as best I can, but it's not an ego thing for me.
Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast, we get the opportunity to speak with a very well-known name in the basketball industry as a coach and as a player, Nate McMillan. Coach McMillan was a draft pick to the Seattle Supersonics in 1986 and then went on to start his coaching career for Seattle following his 12-year playing career in the NBA. He coached in the NBA at various places such as Seattle, Portland, Indiana, and Atlanta, all in the assistant role, while also holding the head coaching title in Indiana and most formally with the Atlanta Hawks. This conversation was so insightful, we just kept going. So we decided to split it into two parts. So please welcome Coach Nate McMillan. Video analysis is expensive and your budget probably isn't getting much bigger. Fulcrum Tech is here to help. Used by basketball teams at all levels from Division I all the way to high school, their Angles product is very similar to what you know and allows you to code, capture, and analyze with ease. All you have to do is import the raw video in Synergy with just the click of a mouse. Over the past 2 years, over 60% of Division I teams in conferences such as the SEC, Pac-12, American, NBC, and A-10, just to name a few, have made the postseason, all while using Fulcrum Tech and saving thousands and thousands of dollars compared to their old companies. Reach out to Fulcrum Tech on X at Fulcrum Tech or their sales@fulcrumtech.com. Just shoot them over an email and be sure to mention if you are a Rising Coaches member. Do more, spend less with Fulcrum Tech. Welcome to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You got your favorites here, Doug and Alan. And today, Alan, I tell you what, we are spoiled on the podcast. We have, I should say, if you've ever paid attention to basketball, more specifically NBA basketball in the previous 15, 20 plus years, you would know the name. A former NBA player and coach, most previously the Atlanta Hawks head coach, Nate McMillan. Coach McMillan, what's going on?
Hey, nothing much. I sleep in now.
Right, the laptop's not next to the bed anymore.
No, it's like till 8 o'clock. I get up at 8 and get going and get my coffee and all of that. So awake and ready to rock and roll. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. So to give you an idea, as well as anybody listening, so we'll talk about your journey, your coaching experiences, very briefly touch on your playing experiences, just because we feel like playing always ties into coaching in a way. We'll talk about your coaching experiences, journey, and then at the end, we'll just kind of cover some overall philosophies and tendencies that you as a head coach, no matter where you were, just like to instill. And then we'll get to a final segment that basically just humanizes you, lets everybody know who you are as a human being. Three quick hitters. Had a former NBA player, David West, on. Mm-hmm. We have had a former assistant coach, Lionel Chalmers, from the Orlando Magic.
Actually, current assistant,
excuse me.
Lionel, yeah.
You are the first head coach in the NBA that we have had, and this is a huge opportunity for us. So we're definitely looking forward to speaking with you and learning more from you.
Yeah.
But to jump right into things, your collegiate basketball career begins. You're a student athlete. Correct me if I'm wrong, it's Chowan University, correct?
Chowan, yes.
Chowan. I knew I was going to, I even did the research and I still.
Hey, they okay. Everything. Chowan.
And then you're there for 2 years, which then leads you to NC State for your finals. Talk about your playing career first, just, you know, how you were able to go from one university to the next, kind of moving up, but then also just how that helped you build yourself as a player. To prep you for the league?
Oh, it definitely helped me, but it really started before then. You know, when I was in Parks and Recreation, I played in Parks and Recreation here in Raleigh up until my 10th grade year. And I had really good coaches. You know, we had a program here that really taught you the basic fundamentals of playing every sport. So I played all sports growing up. Played baseball and football and basketball in the park system. And our coaches did a great job of, you know, teaching us drills and just teaching us the basics of how to play the sport that we were playing. So I did that until the 10th grade. You know, once I got to the 10th grade, it was like, you know, football, I had to give it up because those guys
getting bigger.
So got to give up football and had to give football, you know, the guys are trying to throw curves and the curves are not breaking. You know,
that's right.
Okay, basketball seemed to be a safe sport, enjoyed playing it, you know, so was able to play high school basketball and get a scholarship. And went to Chawan, Bob Burke, who is a Bobby Knight type of coach who was really hard. And he coached you hard and he challenged you, you know, both in the classroom as well as on the floor. And, you know, he just brought the best out of you, Alvin. And I ended up going to a 2-year school. I didn't have really any offers coming out high school. I had some JUCO offers, but no major Division I offers. And I went to Chawan and became an All-American, graduated from there. And the state, which is my hometown, I grew up watching David Thompson and Monty Tao and you know, all of those guys, Eric Wittenberg and
Tom Burleson. Yeah.
You know, all of those guys. So I was a fan of NC State before I left Raleigh to go to Chawan. And, you know, after becoming an All-American at Chawan, we had a lot of success down there, had a really good JUCO team, really good JUCO program. NC State, Coach Valvano comes down to Chawan and it was all over. You know, I'm an All-American. I had Maryland and Virginia and Clemson and all of the ACC schools. I didn't have Carolina and Duke. But because they weren't taking JUCO players, at that they didn't recruit JUCO players, was a school that I was heading to, and Coach Valvano came down. This was right after NC State had won the national championship, and it was all over. You know, once he came down, we just stopped all visits and communication with other schools, and I signed with NC State.
I bet that guy lit up the room. I bet that guy lit up the room when he walked in, huh?
He was awesome. You know, I take from all of my coaching. I really take from really, I think, all of my coaches. But Coach V, you know, I don't think people really gave him credit for his X's and O's. You know, I thought that, you know, he was a scheme guy and, you know, came up with all these different schemes and got lucky and won the national championship. But that guy knew how to coach. I think his best strength was his ability to put together words and motivate his team. You know, so we were, you know, if we were down at halftime, when we came up, when we came out on that floor, the second half, you know, after listening to him, we was ready to run through a wall for that guy. You know, he was really an unbelievable man, unbelievable person. Recruiting me, I'll tell you this story real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mother walked over. My mother used to work over at NC State. And they didn't know that they were recruiting me, and my mother worked right at NC State. when I came up to visit, they had me and my mother in a room, and we're talking, and she was telling them that she worked over at NC State. And he felt so bad that he got on Tommy Abbott-Amaco. He's like,
right.
That mother works right here at NC State. I mean, come on,
right.
Guys.
Right.
He told my mother that you know, what could he do for her? He was trying to make up, you know.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, come to church. So, sure enough, you know, that Sunday, before I was going back, she invited him to church. And sure enough, Coach V brought the entire staff, NC State staff, to this Black Baptist church. When he walked in the church, I mean, the whole church just turned and looked like, you know, oh my goodness, we got Val Van,
right, and
the congregation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking at my mother and she had the biggest smile, you know, up there on in the stands, because she was singing that particular.
Oh, right, right.
And it was, and you know, Coach, you know, Coach V is like one of those guys, he's at home wherever he goes.
Right.
And standing up and he's clapping and he's patting and he's just... So it was a done deal. It was after that.
Oh man, he reminded me of Pete Bell and Blue Chips when he walked in the shacks, you know.
Kind of like recruiting wise, what made you go to NC State? But it sounds like that was probably, that was a recruited. That's at least I did. And it's, and I have to go back to what you had, where you first initially started all this. That's impressive to me that I didn't know you had no college offers coming out of high school. You only had very minimal opportunities, and then you end up going into a collegiate athlete, into the NBA, into an NBA player, assistant coach, head coach. Like it's crazy how, you know, starting, I don't even want to say from the bottom, but like technically, and then moving all the way up to the very, very, very top. That's crazy. I didn't know that. So that kind of gives people an idea as to, like, you know, how fast and things can move too.
Yeah, it was from the bottom. I mean, it was from the bottom. I was never the best player on my team. I always had, you know, all-stars or more talented guys on my team. So for me, I, you know, and you know, I think I was, you know, okay athletic-wise, but really, it started for me years ago when I used to follow my older brother. And, you know, I always wanted to be with my older brother. He's 5 years older than me. So he introduced me to sports and got me into sports. And I would follow him and I would end up playing with those guys. You know, the older guys, football, we would play baseball, we would play basketball. And so I learned how to really assist
right
playing those older guys. You know, when I played with them, I couldn't shoot the ball. You know,
oh like, yeah. No, you better not. You better not. That's right.
So I learned to play defense and I learned to hustle and steal and pass the basketball at that. And when I played kids my own age, I was a little bigger and, just a little bit more smarter playing with them because I played with the older kids as much as possible. So I played center when I played with kids my own age, you know, so I'm playing like Magic and.
Yeah, right. Right.
I was out there, you know, and, you know, so all of that helped me going into or getting to JUCO and then getting to NC State. You know, so when I got to those programs and then, you know, what Coach Burke at my JUCO did for me, toughening me up and really, you know, he stayed an hour behind about everything, you know, going to class and you know, if you miss class, you pay for it. That day. I remember missing class one day, and you know, it's like, how is he? No, we got 2 o'clock practice, and I missed like 11 o'clock class or something like that. And the guy knew before I even got in there that I had missed class. So we had this deal called the snake, where you had to, if you missed class or your grades dropped or anything like that, the punishment was you had to go out 6 o'clock in the morning and run the football field. And you had to do it by yourself. And you didn't know if he was out there watching what. At the time, he was in his car somewhere. Yeah, in that football stadium somewhere, because of and watching you run the snake, and you had to run the 190, 80 step. You had to do all it, run the bleach, so it kept you from class, and you know, made sure that you kept your grades and everything up. But a lot of what made me stronger or became a brick in my foundation was basically the grassroots, you know, when I was younger and just understood or learned to assist, to appreciate the opportunity that was given to me to play and to play with different organizations, different teams, and to play for, you know, these really good coaches. So that throughout my career.
So off of that then, I mean, just being able to get, you're saying you were never the best player on your team. You're saying that you move up through all of these. And then, I mean, with the opportunity to put on an NBA jersey and get your name in the headlights. How was that, being able to just kind of get that experience, get drafted to the Seattle Supersonics, and then just really hearing your name at the end of the day?
I had to pinch myself, because where I was coming from, I didn't see that. I didn't see that athlete playing college, playing pro basketball. It wasn't a dream of mine to play professionally. And I wasn't trying to get to the NBA. I was really living in the moment. Everything that I had for that team, that coach at the moment. And as I continue to grow and I continue to work, you know, things, doors just open up. All of a sudden, I'm getting mail from Cleveland and Seattle Supersonics and you know, different NBA teams. And I'm saying, oh my goodness.
Right. Right.
These guys know my name, you know. So I think it when it became real for me was when Coach V brought me into his office and he said to me, I want to introduce you to an agent. I'm saying, what?
Yeah, what for? Right, me?
Right. Agents. And it became real. I think it became real for me at that moment when he introduced me to my agent, who was Bill Pollack. And I was going to need some representation because I was going to get drafted. And at that time, there was only two rounds. It was four. I think it was four or five. It was four or five rounds at that time. And they cut it to two rounds.
Always
first pick in the second round.
Go ahead, let it out. So, go ahead, let it out.
I like that. Draft
pick.
First pick in the second round. And the thing about during the draft, my family, my brother, my girlfriend at the time, all came over to the house and we're watching the draft. Sure enough, you know, we're waiting for my name to be called. The draft goes off. You know how after the first round, they cut.
Right.
They
right.
cut, you know.
Right, right. Now you're staring at the phone.
Yeah. They cut until the phone ring. It's Seattle. And they're telling me that I was selected to the Supersonics. And I'm sitting there like, where is Seattle?
Right. Couldn't be farther away from Raleigh, that's for sure.
I mean, I got to tell you that story another day. But, you know, it's like Seattle Supersonics. I'm like, man, I got to go all the way across the country. it worked out for me. It was the best thing that could have happened to me and for me go out to Seattle and work under Coach Bernie Bickerstaff, who was another hard coach who really challenged me. And, you know, he's still a big part of my life, respect in the world for Coach B. And he was a man probably that I needed at that time.
And then off of that, I mean, we'll kind of fast forward a little bit. The playing career ends, and now you have to step on the other side of the line, first as an assistant coach staying in Seattle. And then I know you ended up transitioning to numerous other places as well. You go to the interim head coaching position in Seattle, and then, you know, Portland, Indiana, and Atlanta. But just talk about, you know, going on the other side of the Lions, first as a player and then going into a assistant coach and then ultimately working your way up over all those years to a head coach in the NBA nonetheless.
And I want to interject something real quick, Nate. I'm sorry, Doug, but in a way, it's kind of a segue to what you just said and what he's going to answer. But when you felt that inspiration to coach after playing, you know things are winding down. Did you feel like the coaches that had coached you inspired you to want to be the same?
Let me just go toward how I became a coach, because I was dealing with a lot of injuries towards the NBA. I played 12 years in the NBA. All 12 years were played with the Seattle Supersonics. Mm-hmm. You know, there were several opportunities for me to move and, you know, go on and try to make more money and you know, have a better position. I chose to stay in Seattle because, again, I've always been appreciative of opportunities that people have given me. And it's never been about, you know, it really wasn't about the money as opposed to I'm playing professional basketball. I'm getting, mm-hmm. I'm getting right. Play. So right. Money, yeah. This is my job. So it was like any amount of money was working for me.
Gravy, right. That's right.
I remember I was negotiating with the Seattle Supersonics and they brought in Gary Payton. They drafted Gary Payton. And I was starting until that point. And they bring in Gary Payton, and Gary Payton, number two pick. And he came in with this dukes up, like this veteran is going to be like,
you're in my way.
Yeah. he came in not knowing what was going to happen. And, you know, Sonics asked me, you know, do you want to move or no? I said, no, we're going to make this work. Let us battle it out. And, and the battle was he was drafted top pick. So he was starting.
the battle was on draft night.
Be patient. He was going to be the starting guard. And for me, I said, no, I don't want to be traded. We're going to make this work. And I remember my wife and my agent saying, well, if they offer you $1 million, we ain't taking that. We ain't taking that because we can go and get a lot more. You can get a starting position. And I looked at them both and I told them, I said, if they offer me $1 million to play basketball, that thing is signed.
Staying right here.
That is signed. Okay. And right. Sure enough, they did. They offered me to play. And I'm like, of course, they're going to offer me $1 million to play basketball. That contract is signed. And I signed the contract, ended up, you know, staying in Seattle my entire career for 12 years. Decided to retire because I had, you know, was having a lot of injuries. I had tendonitis that was so bad. It was like, you know, I my and really, I was using drugs in the sense of painkillers.
Right.
And I told myself, not going to, if I got to use this amount of medication to play, it's over for me. And, you know, because I was popping pills and Tylenol and Advil and Naproxen and all of those things to play. But once I was off the floor, I mean, I couldn't even get in cars. You know, my wife couldn't touch. If she bumped me in the night, bumped my knee. Oh, it was like. Yeah.
Few choice words came out. Oh man, almost ended up in divorce court from getting your knee bumped.
Look, you were ass in the bed, man. You know.
Oh.
Hey, so it was time to do something different, because I wanted to make sure that when I left that sport, that I could play with my kids.
Sure. Quality of life. Yeah.
Great kids, you know, so it was like, it was time for me to try to do something different. Mm-hmm. Because I had stayed in the community for so long, the Ackerleys, who was the owner of the team at the time, offered me a assistant coaching position, but it really came from George Carl. You know, I had no, I didn't even think about coaching. It was like, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what I'm going to do in retirement, and coaching was not even there. But Coach Carl, who was my coach when I was about to retire, and I had played for him for about 4 or 5 years, he and I had a really good connection on the floor. Even though I was, you know, backing up Gary, I was still team captain. I was still, you know, basically in the role that I was used to being in. I wasn't the best player on the team, but I would still lead and, you know, have that communication and that connection with my coach. So right. Coach Carl asked me to be on the staff when I retired. And because I was facing so many injuries during the season, he would ask me to come into the coaches' meetings. And I'm like, hey, whoa, I'm not, you know, I'm still on the roster.
Right, but right.
He really respected me that much to have me come into the coaches' meetings as a player and talk about the game plan and the strategy and all of that type stuff. And I wouldn't do that because I just felt like I couldn't do that and still be on the roster and have the respect.
Yeah,
that's fair. You know,
teammates and my peers.
Absolutely. You know, right.
But after that last year, Coach Carl ends up leaving. He wants me to go with him to Milwaukee. And again, both of my kids were born in Seattle. The ownership was offering me an assistant coach with Coach Paul Westfall, who took over for Carl. And look, I'm going to just stay put. Again, you know, I was appreciative of what they had done for me. And I wanted to try to make this work. So I became the assistant to Coach Paul Westfall, which only lasted a year and a half. After a year and a half of being an assistant, they want to fire Coach Westfall, and they are talking about making me head coach. Now, mind you, I've been an assistant for a year and a half.
Right.
I already have in my mind that I'm going to pay my dues here, and I want to be a long-time assistant. I'm okay. I'm comfortable.
Sure. With that. Right.
Head coaching is not even that's not even a thought. You know, I'm thinking about Coach Gergrich, who was an assistant, and I worked with him for a number of years. And what kind of assistant do I want to become? So those are my thoughts.
Sure. Well,
we fast forward, and I come into the office one day, and Wally Walker comes into my office. He says, Nate, now I'm in the office at 7 o'clock. My wife, and I always went into the office even as a player early. You know, my mm-hmm. wife fooling around most of the time. She's like, it's no book. She told me this one day. I just saw Gary go across the bridge at about 9 o'clock. You've been gone since 7 o'clock, so I know you guys didn't have practice.
Yeah, who is she? She's asking.
Going into the office at 7 o'clock, and I see Gary going across the bridge at 9 o'clock. You know, but I always was one to. I want to be prepared. I don't mm-hmm. want to be rushing. You know, so I would go in. I would have my coffee and get my treatment and mm-hmm. Sports Center, you know, put on a sock and, you know, do some stretching. And, you know, so I just kind of took my time, and I've always been like that. So even as a coach, mm-hmm. you know, I had to come in like that because I couldn't type.
Strengths and weaknesses. Hey, it is what it is.
I got to get this scouting report ready. So, you know, I'm pecking. It's like, I got good at it. It's like, boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. You know,
oh,
so
man.
Hey, I'm in the office at 7 o'clock, and Wally Walker walks in my office and he says, look, Nate, we just let go of Paul and make you head coach. And I'm sitting here like, you kidding? He said, no, we let go of Paul and we want to make you head coach. And I said, man, I'm like, I didn't know. And practice is at 10. This is about 7 o'clock. And I, look, let me make some calls. I had to call my wife. I called my brother. I called my agent, and I'm talking them, and I'm saying, you know, they just offered me the head coaching position, and I'm sitting there like, you're kidding me. So I go back into Wally's office about 30 minutes later, something like that, and I tell Wally, I said, no, I said, you should make Dwayne Casey head coach. Dwayne Casey was an assistant for George Karl, so I played for Dwayne. And then I was watching Dwayne as an assistant because it was my first time on being on the bench. So he's a mentor. He's a mentor. Was prepared and he was ready. And I'm watching this guy, you know, I have been watching him over the last year or so, how he gave his scouting reports, you know, information. You know, Dwayne Casey was a guy that, like, I remember him telling the story. He would get these five subject notebooks for on every coach. I tell him, I said, no, you should hire Dwayne Casey because Case is ready for this position. It wasn't an ego thing for me. It was like, you know, I've always taken the approach, what's best for the team? I'm gonna contribute as much as I can and as best I can. But it's not an ego thing for me, you know, and it's not about the numbers or about the money. Like, what's best for this team? And Dwayne Casey felt was best for the Sonics at that time. You know, he was young and he had spent a lot of time as an assistant with some great coaches. He worked as an assistant and a scout for Kentucky. I felt he was ready. I said, you should hire Dwayne. Well, I walk out of Wally's office. About an hour later, Dwayne comes in. And Dwayne, Wally goes over and talks to him about the position. And Dwayne says, you should hire Nate. True story. You know, I don't know exactly what he said, but he says, Nate is ready for this. So Wally comes back to my office maybe an hour and he said, look, I talked to Dwayne. We feel you should take this position. Basically, again, practice is at 10 o'clock. I decided after talking with my family and everybody that, okay, I'm going to try to make this happen without any coaching, you know, only a year and a half of being an assistant. I didn't know anything really about coaching, coming up with coaching plans and practice plans, and only what I had learned in that year and a half of watching AC and all of that, and Coach Westfall. So threw the whistle over my head, went downstairs and addressed Dean. Mind you, again, when I go downstairs to address the team, Gary Payton is still on the team.
Wow.
So this guy that I've been playing with for the past 5 or 6 years, I'm now coaching. Really, it really wasn't a hard transition, because even when I was playing with him, we had that respect, because I became like his big brother. I was already doing it, not knowing that, you know, one day I would be coaching him. But it was just I approached the game. You know, I was one of those guys that, even though I wasn't the star on the team, you know, I just couldn't tolerate some things that the team would sometimes do.
Yeah, you were kind of coaching him already before you had the coach.
And tell the team how much they was BSing, and, you know, we this and we have to do that. And I think that's where Coach Carl, you know, gained the respect from me that, look, you know, this guy's already doing what we need for that team to do. He's policing the team himself. You know, so, you know, I went into that, and that's how I became head coach.
Thank you for tuning in with us today for our part one with Coach Nate McMillan. Be sure to tune into our next episode to catch the rest, and for our part two. Prepare your team for success this season with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball, the official number one selling shooting machine in basketball. If you're looking to transform and focus your team's training efforts, all you have to do is mention Rising Coaches or tell them we sent you with the Rising Coaches podcast. For an additional $300 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.